We tell stories to share the human experience.
No matter what form it takes.
Actor, photographer, theatre maker, musician, whoever is trying to be heard.
We can't stop telling stories. There's no end to them.
By telling stories, we connect to each other and create a sense of community.
This is an opportunity to share stories from a talented and diverse range of individuals, in the hope it provides inspiration and knowledge.
This is a podcast about Australian storytelling in all its forms, hosted by two Australians in the arts industry.
Welcome to the Act of Storytelling. Hi, everybody.
I'm Nick Kane.
And I'm Lauren Bailey.
And thanks for listening.
Here we are with podcast 10.
We've hit double digits, Lauren Bailey. Well done.
Ooh, did you think we'd do it?
There were times where I thought we might not have.
There are still times.
There's still times. But here we are. And it's good to be bringing you this podcast for this month.
On a beautiful sunny springtime day here in Melbourne.
It's beautiful out there, isn't it?
Yes.
Have you got a month to talk about, Lauren?
I always feel like I talk about my month first.
Okay.
So let's talk about yours. Let's mix it up.
All right. Well, I wanted to talk about an Aussie.
Just one?
Just one.
Great.
A guy named Lee Whannell. Do you know Lee Whannell?
Oh, I do know Lee.
Yes.
Okay, I'm excited now.
That's great. Aussie export. I was listening to the radio the other day, and it was Angus Sampson talking on the radio, and he was discussing reading the script for Insidious and how much it absolutely terrified him. And I sort of said, well, okay, well, why? And he went on to say that he reads it late at night, but it's the way that Lee actually writes the script. He said that Lee didn't play into the conventional ideas of script writing. So, for instance, he'd be sitting there and he'd be reading halfway down the page and the rest of the page would be blank because there was a scare directly on the next page. And Lee would also do other things like not do the normal kind of script directions. He would actually speak to the reader going, do you hear that scratch on the window, dear reader?
Oh.
Could that be? You know, like he gets right into it and he pretty much throws out every rule there is with script writing 101.
He is a really interesting guy. I went to AFTERS Friday on my mind, Acme.
Yes.
He did a talk there. I think it was early this year or late last year when they were shooting The Mule.
Oh, yes.
And he was talking about how Saw came about and
tapping into
what you're saying and about the unconventionality. And
it's exactly what I was talking about. And it becomes undeniably his way of writing scripts. And Saw was one of those cases where, I mean, Lee before Saw was actually doing Recovery, a very famous Australian music show before that. But obviously to get the attention of the Hollywood bigwigs, he had to write something that was amazing. You know, for an untried Hollywood scriptwriter.
Yeah, absolutely.
He kind of needed to break the rules and becoming fresh with what you're doing. And I had an experience with this month when I went to an audition. And I was doing the scene and the director obviously wanted to change things up a bit, so I got involved with the scene.
Yeah.
And at the time, just came over me this need to go over and tickle her as a part of the scene, right?
Yeah.
And it fit. Like it was the right thing to do at the time. But once it happened, and if you're listening from America too, you have very different rules with touching directors in auditions. So
you tickle the director.
Yeah, tickle director during the scene.
I assumed you're auditioning with another actor and that you tickle. Okay, right.
The director stepped in and I tickled her.
Yep.
And she was immediately...
Don't try this at home.
Well, that's what I was saying about Americans. You can't do this in America. You can't touch a director in the audition room. It's a bit different here in Australia. But it was quite funny and it actually drove the scene into beautiful places. And I sort of, after the scene, says, I'm sorry I took that route. I hope that didn't put you off or whatever. And she goes, no, I loved it. She goes, I actually bit the last guy who's auditioning. And what I loved about that was I ended up getting the job.
Oh, great.
And afterwards, thank you. And afterwards, I sort of said to her, well, you know, hopefully that's okay. That, you know, do you normally get that kind of thing? And she goes, no, I loved what you did. She said, it made it really easy to know you were the one because you're able to adapt and make the scene what it needed to be brilliant.
Great.
And I went, wow. Why haven't I been tickling more directors? No, not at all. But it was this idea of not necessarily conforming to what you should normally do in an audition room, to be yourself, and I know I'm calling it breaking the rules, but just to allow you to be who you are and to be fresh and to be memorable in a lot of senses.
It's really interesting.
Hmm.
I been for a few auditions this month. And one of the things for me at the moment is really this idea of just coming from me.
Yes.
That's something I'm exploring in my life and my career.
Yeah.
And yeah, I had a few auditions, and one of them was, I particularly felt great when I walked out of the room.
Yeah.
I just really went in and I was like, yeah, that was me in that room.
That was you, yeah.
Yeah. I didn't book it. I got put on hold, but that wasn't what was important. What was important for me was how I felt about being in the room.
And there is a strength and a confidence that comes from that too, of knowing that you put yourself out there and whatever comes of it, you probably did the best you could do to be undeniably you and to be unique.
Yeah.
So I think that's what I got out of this month, was this idea that you hear so much and you go to so many seminars, and I think sometimes as creatives we actually hem ourselves in by doing too much of this kind of stuff and not actually exploring our own impulses and unique sensibility in this scenario.
Yes.
So sometimes, you know, even though you might have someone telling you to do it a certain way, if that doesn't feel right, just consider breaking the rules every now and again.
Well, I love, love, love that is what you have brought to the podcast table this month, Nick.
Are you going to tie in with this quite nicely?
Yes.
Yes. Look at us go.
I was trying to think what I would say the name of my story for this month is.
Yes.
And I'm going to name it Exploration.
Ooh.
With the theme, enjoy the challenge. So
ooh,
let me take you on a journey.
Yeah, please.
That probably ends in a similar place to where you just took us. Okay, so in this last month, I did the masterclass with Carol Rosenfeld.
Yes.
And I've also been working on the feature film, Experience the Knowing.
Yes.
And I've been working on this whole thing of balance in my life.
Yes.
And where that fits into it. In keeping with your suggestion last month of enjoyment. And it's amazing how accountable this podcast makes me feel. Literally every day since we last recorded, I'm like, what am I going to say next month? What am I going to say? So start with the masterclass, which was amazing. Carol Rosenfeld is such a warm, beautiful person with over 50 years teaching experience.
Yeah.
And I had the opportunity to work with Thomas Blackburn. He was my scene partner.
Uh-huh.
I was just hoping that I would end up getting partnered with someone who was kind of nice and could kind of act.
Yeah.
I was like, that's what I
You're
want.
You're not asking too much, are you? Just tick those two boxes.
And if
I'm
he
happy.
Wasn't nice, at least someone who, you know, was open to exploring a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, great.
As it turned out, I got paired with a guy who's incredibly nice and also a great actor. So heads up to you, Thomas Blackburn. Well done. And we worked really hard in a short amount of time to try to get our scene to the point where we could learn as much as possible from Carol in this class. And I think we did a pretty good job of getting it to where we needed to be. And we got up in class and we'd watched all these other amazing actors and Carol's feedback to them, and that was great. But we just had the opportunity to explore and to do. And you know how people say the acting is in the doing?
Mm-hmm.
And so often we spend time going to seminars and reading books and doing all this other work around acting, which I think is completely necessary.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
But it's not until we have the opportunity to do and to follow our impulses that we really get to explore. Mm. And so it was amazing working with Carol, because through her experience, she is someone that the moment that you err from the truth, she'll call you on it. And as soon as she calls you on it, you're like, yeah, I shouldn't have let that moment go.
Mm-hmm.
There's more to be found there. And she gives you what you need to continue to find the truth of the character and the story that you're telling.
It's about having the confidence too to go there as well, like giving you the platform to be able to go, well, I can explore this, you know, wherever that may take me.
Yes.
And that's the exciting thing.
A lot of self-belief came out of this month. And so I had a great time working with Carol and continuing to explore. And then I had the fantastic opportunity to work on set this month in this feature. And, you know, it's a really interesting idea for this film that I'm working on. And all I am required to do is to turn up as an actor and go on set and do my thing.
Like we talk about this as well in this podcast quite a bit off air, about this idea of we're both performers. While we love this podcast, we don't want to be known as the people that talk about acting or talk about creative. So we want to be the ones doing, right?
Yeah.
So while this is lovely, at the end of the day, this is part of
a part of
means,
the experience.
Yeah, to get there. Yes.
But so I just have one more thing to say about my month. I've been thinking about this balance enjoyment thing and how to achieve that. And last month I came to the realization that I need to be more specific about what I want from life.
Yes.
And it was really interesting that the day before we record these bookends, I went out and I ran into someone that I used to go to university with. Her name's Yvonne Fletcher and she's an actress. She also has her own business as a healer.
Oh, yes.
And I know we talked to Chintzia quite a bit about theta healing and about clearing blocks and all that amazing stuff. So it was kind of great for me to run into Yvonne. And I was explaining to her about how in the last few years, and I've mentioned this on the podcast before, I have realized that it's not about a big break or when I get this gig or I will be happy when I'm playing this role. I keep saying to people, it's about enjoying the struggle. And as soon as I said that, she said, oh, no.
I was going to say the word struggle.
And I said to her, but struggle in a great way.
Yeah.
And she said, yeah, but you need to change the word struggle.
Mm.
And I was like, yeah, maybe, right? Because struggle is this sense of ongoing.
Yeah. It's also a negative connotation type of word, isn't it?
Well, no, I know. But if I'm thinking of it in a positive way, then that you might not hear it that way. But
yeah.
But again, arguable.
Yep.
And she said, what if you decided to enjoy the challenge? And so this is my new motto.
Enjoy the challenge.
Because as soon as she said that, I was like, oh, that's great. It makes me feel really excited.
Yeah. I thought it was going to be enjoy the exploration to fit in quite nicely with your...
Well, no, but so my theme. Story is called Exploration and my okay. motto is... Oh.
This is getting all too confusing. Do you want to head into our storyteller for this month, Lauren? Are you
Absolutely.
Excited?
Absolutely. I'm so excited. We are about to sit down with the wonderful Gabriella Rose Carter. She is an actor, a coach, a director, and...
Theatre company founder too.
Theatre company founder slash generally amazing person.
Yes.
Who has a lot of great things to say. So let's get to it. So here we are with the lovely Gabby Rose Carter... At Q44 headquarters
yes,
in Richmond.
Are.
Can we
welcome.
Talk about... Oh, yes, welcome.
Thank you.
I mean,
thank
well, you have us here, so really welcome
yeah, well,
to us.
Welcome to you.
Thanks
welcome
for making the tea.
Yeah, oh, the tea's
oh, the tea is perfect right now.
It is. So tell us a little bit about this space. This is Q44's home, isn't it?
It is. I was coaching an actor, 2 years ago now? And he said to me, you know, if you ever need a space, my mum's got some, you know, art space over in Richmond. And I was like, okay. So I went to New York and I was really inspired by a few people over there. And I came back and I thought, you know, I think I'm ready for my own studio. I want to create a theatre, ensemble, work together, community, et cetera, et cetera. So we had another private when I got back and he said, look, that space I was telling you about, it's available. Do you want to go and see it? And it's amazing.
Great.
It so is amazing.
Yeah, but normally when people say that stuff is amazing, you know, they've got different tastes.
Mm.
So I said to him, you know, I'll need to check it out because your amazing might be different to my amazing.
Yeah.
So literally he opened the door. Like, first of all, you come in and it's all these visual
spaces.
artists everywhere.
Doing their thing in
doing
all the little
their
pockets
thing.
Of
yeah,
the building,
and of all
isn't
different
it?
Ages,
yeah.
which is
yeah.
really beautiful,
yeah.
you know. So David's like, I think, almost 70, and then you've got, you know, people that are 20. So it's just really beautiful in how they inspire each other and how they...
interact.
Yeah, and how they
it's
feed each other.
It's a great environment to be creating.
And it's quite amazing, this space. Like, I'm looking at it right now, and it's an intimate space, isn't it?
It's
beautiful.
It?
Mm. Yeah.
So to get started, let's get you to read your story.
Beautiful. I've always been observant. I watch people and learn from their actions rather than their words. My mother gave birth to me at the age of 16. A Hungarian immigrant, she spent her days packing chocolates for Red Tulip, while my grandparents took care of me. I was born in Melbourne and spoke Hungarian till I was 5 years old. Once I started school, English became my second language. An only child, I struggled to fit in. I loved talking Hungarian. I talked a lot about everything. I loved communicating. In English, I was very quiet and almost shy. The English language terrified me. It intimidates me till this very day. Like a warrior, the fear galvanizes me to master the art of storytelling. In retrospect, this was the catalyst for my journey as an artist. When I began, now 20 years ago, I was ignorant to acting. I thought it was about me. It's not about me. I do matter, but it's not about me. It's about story, telling a story. My profession is to interpret a script. As an actor, director, or a coach. Acting is not about being someone different. Meryl Streep describes it beautifully. It's about finding the similarity in what is apparently different than finding myself in there. I believe acting chose me. Through telling stories, we are reminded how connected we all are. I feel proud to be part of the tribe.
Thank you, Gabby. That was really beautiful to hear you read, and obviously it's some of that stuff's very emotional for you as well when you go back over it.
Yeah.
And I'm actually going to jump a few questions ahead here just because I want to. I think it's good.
That's a good reason.
Because I wanted to talk about your mother, first of all. Because I did notice the red tulip moments about your mum packing chocolates meant so much to you. And I just wanted to talk a little bit more about, you mentioned she was an immigrant coming to Australia.
Yeah.
And how that affected you growing up and as a storyteller.
Yeah, I was just saying to you guys before, I haven't really said that to anyone before. So it's what that means. Like, when my mum tells me that story, she's really proud of that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and the beautiful thing about being creative or being an artist telling a story is it doesn't matter what you're doing in that story, it's to be brave enough to be proud of it. Mm.
And you talk about being the warrior too. Do you feel like that came from, I guess, your relationship with your mother as a starting point?
Because my dad left when I was really young, so it became her and I. So I needed to be to survive in a way. And that's why I believe other things could have chosen me, like I could have gone down other paths. Mm. But it's just the freedom of being able to express myself in a safe way, and I feel that creatively is the best way to do it.
Did she have artistic tendencies as well?
She drew and she loved, she was really interested in dressmaking. So that was kind of a thing that she was always, and costumes and stuff. And every now and then she'll kind of flash back to a story of when she was in Hungary and she was in a play or, you know, so there's that kind of flash of that. Yeah, but it's interesting, I think, what our parents give us and how we can be creative with it. I feel, you know, both her and my dad gave me something beautiful that I'm sharing as a storyteller. And I don't know if there's any words to articulate that, Nick, you know?
Yeah, I get
it's,
you.
It's the magic of it, and to give too much of my secret away in terms of that. But, yeah, I believe that's part of our history, and our history is part of something that is worthy of being shared.
I fully agree.
You know?
So as an Australian, you clearly have a very strong sense of your Hungarian heritage.
Yes. Yes, I became a Hungarian citizen. I'm celebrating it on Friday. Oh, hello.
How are you celebrating?
Well, I'm going to the Hungarian consulate. Fantastic. And they're giving me a little party. There you go. So, yes.
It seems a bit of a theme for me. You talk about, as a child, you sort of had these sense of these two identities, the talkative Hungarian communicative one, the shy English quiet one.
Yeah.
And as actors, I certainly feel, and a lot of the people I've spoken to, we often have split senses of ourselves, the person who sort of survives day to day and the artist, like that can be a split. There are all sorts of splits.
Yeah.
And now, and of course, on top of that, there's the Hungarian elements versus the Australian elements. How do they all...
And, well, in assimilation, then, you're talking about too, in that, how... What was the question?
Yeah, I didn't really ask a question. It sort of became apparent to me, you know, doing research for this and just listening to you talk now. I guess I have lots of questions. You know, how conscious are you of this Australian cultural influence versus or combined with your Hungarian cultural influence,
for a long time, growing up in Australia, I was very... I don't want to ashamed is but embarrassed about being from somewhere else.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think the red tulip is connected to that.
Okay.
That you know, because my mother was so proud.
Mm.
Yeah, and it was really tough because there was a lot of bullying about it at school and stuff. So then when I went to New York, I was so embraced.
Yeah.
Like, you know, this girl who's, you know, has this Australian accent and is so exotic and You know, I could have been from, you know, Italian, French, Spain, Portugal, you know, the last place they thought I was Hungarian. Then when they found out I was Hungarian, that was like...
It was an addition. It was a great thing. Yeah.
The coolest thing.
Yeah.
So I went over there and I just felt like all of a sudden I started to become encouraged for who I was and what that meant, like...
Yeah.
What that could give me as an artist. And also culturally, you know, we talk and express our feelings very much like Italians or, you know, European cultures. We talk it through and we're not ashamed of, you know, getting emotional or, you know, breaking something down and feeling them. So when I was encouraged to do it more, I felt that I was becoming at peace with myself and who I was.
More you.
And and really being able to step into myself as a woman, that I, you know, I wasn't like an adolescent girl running away from my identity because other people...
That strength.
Yeah. So then that added a lot of strength for me personally, artistically.
Yeah. Mm. So I guess that just makes me realise that we have all these ideas of split identities for ourselves. It's finding our way through them to remember who we really are that provides the strength.
And finding I think that's part of... environment for that too.
Finding an environment for that. You know, everyone has their own challenges, whatever. We'll talk more about it in a minute. You know, going to New York and then having that shift in perspective to help you realise something about yourself.
And I think, you know, when you're watching the great actors, directors, writers, I think, you know, they get to that point of greatness because there's a great acceptance of themselves. And I'm not saying that they're not insecure about things or they don't have paranoia or, you know, stuff going on. Of course, we're all human and we have that. But I sense just through my experience of it that once you have that, there's an ability to be able to be a conduit, whether as a writer or a director or an actor. For me.
And let's talk about your journey. So you started acting in your 20s, is this correct? How did that all start?
Well, it was actually my mother who I always wanted to do it, but again, because of the language, I was so terrified of it and I just thought only smart people were actors. So
that's good to buck that trend, isn't it?
So only people that, you know, spoke English very well and knew all the meanings of words and, you know, and I was like, okay, how does this work for a Hungarian? So, but of course, that wasn't really the psychology. There was just fear around it. So my mum called me one day and she just said, you know, why aren't you doing something about it? And it was pretty as blunt as that. There was no, you know, as mothers can be, why aren't you doing something about it?
Or the only the way people who truly love you can be.
Absolutely, And look, and that's the beautiful thing too, like even though, you know, some people have dysfunction in their family or, you know, we, you know, we were working class, that was one thing that was always apparent and there that I was always supported in terms of being an actor and pursuing it.
You had a beautiful platform to go, okay, I'm going to do
this. I really did. Yeah, so it was pretty much her that kind of kicked me up the butt and said, do it. And then we kind of had a chat about it and she's like, you know, you always just need that little push.
What did you do? Yeah. What was the first step?
Oh, okay, so I was on the Gold Coast at the time. Because I wanted to spend some time with my dad and his family. There was an acting agency, I can't even remember what it was called now, but something like Star Search or Starlight or something, you know. So I just went in and I said, listen, I need representation. Like, if only I could do that now, you know, be that confident. And anyway, like, it was, they were lovely and they said to me, yes, you can, but you need to, have you had training? And, you know, I said, no. And they said, oh, well, we do a little bit of stuff here, blah, blah, blah. So I kind of started it like that. And then someone there, it was funny, John Orchick started TAFTA up there, and someone told me about that, and there's this, you know, amazing teachers there and blah, blah. So I went there just to audit, and like I called them up and the term had already started. I started training there
And so for any of our listeners who aren't aware, that's the Australian Film and Television Academy.
Yeah, I think so.
Which is now based in Melbourne.
It is.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. But it was really interesting because getting back, like we haven't touched it yet, but, you know, when I was doing scenes, I didn't really understand how I was doing what I was doing, but I was just doing it. And then I remember I had a class with him and he asked me to explain to the class how I just did what I did, and I was terrified.
Yeah.
I thought, how can he be asking me that? I have no idea how I just did that. So I just looked at him and I said, I have no idea. And he said, what do you mean you have no idea? And I said, well, it just kind of comes to me. And I felt really embarrassed. And then again, it went back to the language again. I'm like, I don't have the language to articulate this. Yeah. I should know how to do this.
Mm. In hindsight, do you have any idea, was it just a matter of it coming to you? And at that time, you didn't really, it wasn't supported by the tools and stuff you have now, but it was just because of your imagination or?
It was my imagination. Because I'm an only child, my imagination is really strong, and I really believe that because you spend a lot of time, and also I didn't have a lot of cousins, or I was always around adults. So your imagination just starts to really be...
It's your best friend in
Absolutely. Mm. So my imagination, I knew then, was very strong. And I remember the guy I was doing the scene with, he was really worried because he wanted to go over the lines with me and everything. I was like, no, don't worry. He's like, it's a very emotional scene. And, you know, I'm like, no, just trust me. I've got it. I don't
got
know.
What? I don't know.
I don't know what I got. I just felt really confident and comfortable that I knew
what you were doing.
What I was doing.
Natural innate ability there. Yep.
Yeah. And it was exciting for me. I wasn't frightened of it. Yeah.
And so did that experience where you're like, well, I don't know, it just comes to me. Do you feel like that was a stop in your journey? Like, did that slow you down for a while? The fear you felt at that, or did that propel you further?
Well, yeah, it propelled me further because then what happened was the response I got was that I should know, and he helped me in a way because I thought, yeah, you know, you're right. I should know.
Mm.
I really should know. And if I want to get better at this, I really need to have a language. And it's not about explaining or justifying it to other people in a classroom environment. It's just for me.
Yeah.
That I start to understand a technique. So then I met up with a friend and we were talking about it, and she just said to me, I think, you know, you need to go to New York.
Ha-ha.
Segue to next question.
Beautiful, because you are an alumni of the Lee Strasberg Theatre Institute in New York, aren't you?
Yeah.
So that's what prompted your move, basically, a friend?
Yeah. So, like a colleague, you know, we were just... And she mentioned New York, and I thought, okay, New York.
Had you experienced there?
Yeah.
Did you love it?
Yeah.
Life-changing?
Life-changing. From walking in, I thought, okay, I can see how this gets me ready to work. I studied there for 4 years. And look, in terms of my technique already, it was like I was doing it already, but they gave it a language pretty much. And when you can't articulate what you're doing and then someone puts a language to it, there's a sense of family.
Yeah, freedom as well.
Yeah, I was going to say release.
Release, a oneness with it, you know, that it's not so complex for you to kind of find words. The words are just coming out of someone else's mouth in terms of what you're doing. It's like, that's what I'm doing.
I just did the masterclass with Carol Rosenfeld.
Oh, she's amazing.
It was fantastic. So one of the things that I really loved about her class, we came in the morning and she got everyone who was auditing to introduce themselves and say hi, and everyone felt really safe, and it just amazed me that she was so grounded and so down to earth.
And the equality.
Is that what studying over there is like? I don't know. It's just, I guess for me, it was a taste of...
For me, that's definitely been my experience. You know, one person in mind is Ellen Burstyn.
Yeah.
Working with her in that masterclass that I did in 2012, I think it was now. There's never a moment that these teachers and/actors, directors make you feel that... their superior or I've won an Academy Award or whatever it may be.
Mm. Yeah.
It's they feel that, but there's this sense of we're doing this together and we're on the same team. And also you feel that, like especially with Ellen, I always feel that it's in her best interest to pass on what she has learnt from Lee.
Right.
And what she has learnt in the industry, whether you're at her level or you're a beginner. Mm. And I think that's really important. Because I believe that we can learn a lot from people that are professional and we can also learn from beginners to remind us of absolutely things, you know.
So in 2013, mm-hmm. She invited you to become a permanent observer at the Actors Studio in New York.
Yeah.
Can you tell us how that came about?
Yeah. I emailed her and said that I was going to New York and she asked me, because to go to the Actors Studio, even to observe, you have to be a member. So she said, oh, please come and be my guest. So I thought, okay. And I'd been there before, you know, in terms of other people that I know that are members and they can invite people on certain occasions. So she was doing Picnic at the time on Broadway. And so I went along and I was going there every day. We were there for like 3 weeks, I think. Then I went to see her and she asked me how it was and Melissa Leo was there mediating, oops, too loud, at the time. And she just asked me, you know, how my experience was, how was Melissa Leo? And I'm like, yeah, she was cool. act casual.
What am I going to say?
Act casual. Melissa Leo's, she was great. And then, because what happened was there was a guy that I bumped into, a German guy, hey, he's a German, who... I was in a film. He was directing this film and he asked me to be in it because he saw me in a show that I did. And I said to him, oh, are you a member of the Actors Studio? And he's like, no, I'm a permanent observer. Mm. And I'm like, oh, how do you become one of those? And what does that mean? and can I become one?
Yeah.
So he just explained to me, you can apply for it and they kind of look over what you do. Uh-huh. And basically, so it's for directors and writers and people, you know, that have potentially trained with certain people from the studio, is my understanding of it. And then they can go and if they're like looking for talent or, you know, just need inspiration, they can just go and watch a session.
Yes. So at any time they can go along when it's happening.
That's right. Yep. So... the classes are Tuesdays and Fridays,
mm-hmm.
And it's for 2 hours. So what Lee created was this two-hour class, which was free for members,
okay.
And you take in whatever, if you're working on something or you're in a show or you just want to exercise your actor, you go in there and work for 2 hours and get moderated by, you know, Ellen Burstyn.
Mm, as you do.
As you do, like you do.
No pressure.
You know, Melissa Leo.
Yeah.
That's
what I do every Tuesday.
Yeah. And it's wonderful because also they give you insight, but also you're articulating again, going back to what your process is and what you're working on. And
uh-huh.
I think to help you understand your technique and what you're working on, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's fantastic. Quite, yeah.
And you just run into all kinds of people when you're there, I imagine. Have you been quite a few times over the past whoever, like, so 2013?
It's only 1 year.
It's a year. Yeah. Have you gone back and...
Yeah, no, I have a son now who's 4.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit, I'm just being mindful of how much we're travelling. And I spent 10 years over there, so it was just... lovely. And I was actually frightened to go back too because I thought, oh, I go back and I'm going to want to go back. But it was really nice. I love Melbourne and I feel like it's a beautiful city and there's a lot of art and creativity happening in the city.
Mm.
I was going to say, what did bring you back after your 10 years in New York?
What brought me back? In terms of coming back to face your fears, but in terms of it, resolve it.
Unfinished business in Melbourne?
Unfinished business. I have this thing that, you know, it follows you wherever you go. So it's really important to go back to the stem of it.
Mm.
You know, there was other stuff too, like visa issues and, you know, how to kind of sustain it. And I think I did. Look, I feel very lucky that I was blessed in terms of like visas, and they were just kind of falling in my lap in terms of that. But then, you know, really asking the question, okay, and especially after 9/11. So 9/11 hit and all my friends kind of went back to where they were from. And then I was like, okay, do I really want to stay here? What, you know, what do I want to do? What can I do here? Or what can I, can I be doing this at home?
Yeah.
Even though it brought the city together, like even seeing stuff about it now, it just, it really, I get emotional because it was, you know, to see the towers falling and stuff, it was pretty full on.
Yeah. And when you're in that atmosphere as well, it's palpable, that feeling, isn't it, of what's going on.
Yeah. And, you know, knowing that you're under, we're kind of sidetracking, but, you know, being under terrorist attack, it's like, for an Australian who's over there in drama school, like it's just kind of
surreal.
It's completely surreal, you know.
And so while you were there, you were doing acting and directing?
No, I was only acting. And then I met a Spanish choreographer and dancer. I've always wanted to be a dancer, and I've just found dancing and people being connected to their bodies just amazing. Yeah. For me, that's just a whole other level. It's crazy, my connection with dancers, and they just seem to keep coming up. So I met this choreographer in New York. We were doing some acting work together, and at the time I was directing a play which he was in, and then he said to me, he was from the Tenerife, and he said to me, I'm going back, I'm going into this festival, and part of this festival is it's theatre and dance, and I think you and I could like collaborate really well together. Are you interested? And I'm like, okay. And then my dearest friend in the world, Laura Anzani, who is Miranda, her and her husband, he's a director, a commercial and now a film director in Milan. She wanted to put up a play and she asked me to direct it. So through their production company, I went to Italy. But I spent a year, she was really wanting me to stay in Italy, but the Italian, you know, they won't budge on the Italian language. So everything's dubbed and, you know, I understand Italian, and from the Hungarian I learn languages pretty quickly, but in terms of communicating artistically, I would have needed to spend 5 years there
to get to that level.
Absolutely.
And what did you learn, you know, those projects?
Yeah.
What were they like, and working in those cultures, how did you feel there were differences in the approach to storytelling? And
in both, Milan is a little bit more conservative than the Tenerife. So going to Spain first, I dated a guy from Portugal for a very long time, and so I was quite culturally, I fitted in very well there and even in Spain. So for me, their sense, and even though a lot of them didn't speak English, and they did a little bit, but it wasn't, they weren't fluent, they just really embraced me. They just wanted to know about acting and what I was doing, and at least, you know, Strasbourg. And it was very, very encouraging again. So that was really beautiful. And also I was fascinated in all the dance stuff. We were exchanging and I was dancing for a little while, thinking I was a dancer for a little minute in my life. And then in Milan, they're a lot more conservative, so that was a harder transition for me, only because I came from New York, and in New York you can wear and do whatever you want, pretty much in terms of like expressing yourself artistically.
Yeah.
You know, her and I, and she's quite in touch with her artistic dress sense, so we would walk down the street in Milan and it would be quite, who are those girls?
Yeah.
So it was more conservative, and that was a little bit – so even in terms of the play we put on, I really wanted to make a statement because they won't budge from the Italian. So I was like, let's do it in English.
And so film and TV work as well, you've done a lot, including theatre.
Theatre for me, there's something – the adrenaline – like before you go on, that adrenaline, it's almost like – you want to spew. So it's quite, I don't know how healthy it is, but that adrenaline. But then what I find really amazing about it is that that's also a skill to be able to go on. Like, and I'm not telling you guys anything that you don't know, or anyone, but that's a skill. So to also be able to master that, because again, going back to the fear thing, that's like fear at its ultimate. And I don't, with film and TV, you get it a little bit. But I just that look, and it sounds like I'm like addicted to fear and being galvanized by it, really.
Which is a really positive
thing. Yeah, I think that's a positive thing, you know.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And take it as that.
Thank you. I don't see it as negative. Like I haven't really looked at it either way, you know.
I think it's great to have that awareness of what drives you to meet challenges. I just I think that's a positive thing.
You talked a little bit about directing too, but the next step is teaching. When you moved into teaching, how did that all start?
When I wasn't teaching in New York, but a lot of my actor friends in New York were constantly, "You're really good at this, you should teach." And I'm like, "I'm not a teacher, come on." You know? Yeah. And also there's something about it too, like who is it says that those that teach can't do? Who's that? It's in a Woody Allen movie. So there's, you know, and then there's that other, you know, those who teach master their craft. So, you know, being in the, all this stuff around it was coming up for me. And I thought, look, nah, not right now. So then when I came back to face my fear, someone approached me and said, you know, would you like to teach? I was like, okay, let's try it. And if I'm not right for you and I don't dig this, we'll soon know. But let's just keep it open. And I really loved it.
You loved it?
Because the teachers were so generous to me in New York, and I felt that I had to pass it on. I really had to pass it on. Because, you know, in my time, even though I learned so much, I felt like I was taking and being educated, and which is lovely. But I believe that at some point you've got to give back.
And do you feel like there's a similar reward in the directing work you do as teaching, or they're slightly different?
Well, I personally believe that it's different, that it's slightly different. Because as a teacher, you know, I don't believe that anyone can teach anyone how to act. Teachers can guide, support, help overcome obstacles in terms, you know, or mentors or coaches, you know, what do you want out of your career? Where do you want your career to go? Whereas a director's more, there's a vision, it's creative, and there's a skill on getting the actors to fit in to your vision.
It's for a specific story.
That's right. Yeah. And to actually get the actor and use the... Because each actor's different. So a director has to be really good at communicating what they want from you or you and getting that you're different. You've got a sensibility, you've got a history. So I need to figure out how I can get that out of you for you to be in the story as honestly as possible to portray the story.
Beautiful. Well, let's talk about that as far as voices now, okay, because we've introduced a few different skill sets or roles. So, you know, you've got coach, teacher, director, actor. Do you feel like the voice across the three is similar for Gabby Rose Carter, or do you feel like the actor, Gabby Rose Carter, is very different to the director or the teacher?
Slightly.
Okay.
Yeah. The actor's more vulnerable.
Yeah, and has to be for that.
I believe so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I believe so. And it is. It's a vulnerability. I thought I might be able to find another word, but it's a vulnerability that, you know, and don't get me wrong, I believe directors can be vulnerable and teachers can be vulnerable too, but it's a different vulnerability. As a director or a coach, I'm not a conduit. I'm not playing another character.
Yeah. Well, hey, let's turn our focus to Q44 for a moment.
Yes, please.
Let's talk about the name, Q44. How did that come about?
I was watching a YouTube clip on John Patrick Shanley because I was doing some research on him for a play, and he was talking about all actors should get on the Q44 bus, and I was like,
what do you mean?
What do you mean? What is the Q44 bus? So he explained that when he was a kid, he would travel from the Bronx to Queens and on the Q44. And as he got on it, he saw life going by. And I don't know if you know, going from the Bronx to Queens, like what you see in the matter of blocks.
It'd be quite intense and quite...
Vast. It's vast. Absolutely. There's so many different things going on. You know, you've got your gospel and then all of a sudden, you know, Spanish Harlem, and it's just really...
It's life passing you by.
And, you know, the beautiful Jewish communities and, you know, then the Hungarian, you know, blah, blah, blah. So he believed that actors needed to get on this bus, and if you miss the bus, you miss life. And I was like, that would be a great name for a theatre company.
Yeah.
If ever I once were to open one up.
Perfect opportunity.
That's right. That's it.
And you do have quite long rehearsal periods generally for the Q44
I do.
Shows.
And look, there's no logic or There's no set structure for that as yet. I just, being in New York and in terms of the Strasbourg process, and it really, for me, it came from, in terms of the sensory work and learning it and how long it took to actually master it, I thought, I wonder what would happen if you would spend this long, spend like a 12-month period rehearsing something. What would that be like?
Lovely. Wouldn't it? Lovely. I'd find it lovely.
I think so.
And just having seen, all of Q44's shows so far, the detail, I know, look at me go, the detail of the actors was tremendous.
You haven't seen a Q44 show yet?
Go on, Robert. Yeah. I've been overseas. Yeah.
Oh, excuse me.
I missed Spike Heels by about one day, so I was quite upset.
You're forgiven. Yeah. You're forgiven.
Don't worry, I'm seeing the next one. That's for sure.
Which is Kafka's Monkey, which is coming up.
Sorry, I thought you were still making points.
Well, I was just going to say about the actors' detail, that each of the shows had amazing detail. Like, you know when you can see these things and you can really absorb and the actor takes you into their world so brilliantly. Mm-hmm. That's what I loved about it, and I really believe that was connected to the process as well of having
Thank
so much
you.
Time
yep.
inside these characters, if you will.
Yeah, and also finding it. Because for me, it's not only just about, you know, having the time to just research the playwright.
Mm.
That in itself, a lot of things about the play, about the story, is revealed from researching the playwright as a starting point.
Yeah.
And that takes time. Like, you know,
yeah,
you were
definitely.
Talking,
you yes, know, I was talking about the research I tried to do on your upcoming show, Kafka's Monkey, at the 11th hour. And as soon as I dipped into the bucket, I just realised it's such an amazing play, and there's so much behind it. Mm. Shall we talk about that?
Yeah,
we can talk about it, yeah.
12th to the 30th of November. It's happening at your – we're obviously in Swan Street, Richmond. Look it up. The website will give you all the details.
And it's an adaptation by an Irish playwright, Colin Teevan, which is based on Kafka's darkly comic short story, A Report to an Academy. So there's a minefield in itself. Now, Kafka's short story is by an ape, Red Peter, and he lectures the esteemed members of the Academy on his transformation into a cultured European man.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm not sure where to start.
Where do we start?
So it's just a piece of text by Kafka, which Colin has taken and extrapolated, and you've now put your own mark on it. So talk to us about that.
Pretty much, so what, you know, it's very relevant what he's talking about. And the main theme of it, I think, that moved me, and I think also Boris, because he's from Bosnia, so there's similarity there for both of us. And he came over, I think, when 12 years ago, and he's now so in his 20s. And it's that thing of identity and assimilation, and how Kafka found this article back in 1917, and this monkey was being trained to smoke, to read the paper, and to drink alcohol and ride a tricycle. And he just felt that there was just something inhumane about it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the more research that we've – and, I don't want to give too much away about the play, but the more – then we started researching the time and what was happening and how – you know, that it was also around the time when Hitler was coming into power, and how that influenced everything, and how it's also relevant now, and things are very similar now, even though, you know, Hitler is not in power, but there are a lot of parallels.
I guess there's a lot of correlations you can draw in this sense of inhumanity and stuff that's happening in our own political climate.
Right. And the transformation, and also how we treat human beings like monkeys.
Mm. And we were talking about this before we started to record about, I mean, to have a theme like that still relevant today is, I guess, a testament to the story. And
I think that's a great storyteller. Mm. It's when you can write something that is still relevant hundreds of years later.
Amazing.
You know, like when Chekhov does it, Shakespeare does it, Kafka does it.
Yeah.
And Tennessee Williams. A lot of the text is, you were saying, quite
Oscar Wilde.
Quite Shakespearean, the verse.
There was a script that was printed out for the playbill for the Old Vic so that they could understand it, because so much of her work was based, because she's a choreographer and dancer and she's a woman, so she was transformed.
This is Catherine Hunter.
That's right. Yep. So she was doing, you know, transforming from a woman into a man, into a monkey. I think there was a lot more emphasis on that.
Mm.
So they just wanted the script to be given to the audience so they could walk away with it and have it to reflect on or read in case they miss something. So, but what Colin talks about is that he, because there's these two sides of this character, that he wanted it to be quite Shakespearean in the terms of, in terms of the punctuation and how it's written, in terms of verse and prose. So finding that rhythm in there with the accent is challenging but also exciting, because even with Shakespeare, every, you know, when you're reading Shakespeare, the imagery, I think what's beautiful about Shakespeare is you say these words and the images just come to life. There's very little acting you need to do, because the words just really speak for themselves. And if you just allow yourself to see what you're talking about, it's there. And Kafka's very similar to that in his writing. So, you know, the things that he talks about in, you know, 55 minutes that the play is, it's just the visual on it is quite spectacular.
Spectacular.
Yeah, it really is.
And you've just covered a few amazing storytellers just there. But do you personally have any storytellers that really resonate with you, either now or across your life?
Yeah, look, I went... I'm a big John Cassavetes fan. And while I was in New York, like, I just watched everything, and there's a documentary on him and stuff. And I just, yeah, he made a really, again, someone that made a difference to what we do. Cassavetes, you know, his theme was a call to action. What can we do?
What can we do, yeah.
What can we do? And let's do it. And some people will like it and some people won't, and that's okay. That's art.
I was going to say, is there in the work that you've selected for the 2014 season, you know, you've chosen some amazing plays. Do you feel like when you choose a season of work that you're choosing stuff that has an overarching theme, or that you're trying to say a particular, send a particular message?
For me, this season, truthfully, they needed to speak to me. Dolores really spoke to me in terms of, it's a piece really talking about women and their relationships and how they get along in a family environment. So that was something really beautiful that I felt like I needed, because I'm an only child. I felt it was really important for me to understand and to have empathy for people that have siblings. You know, because I don't necessarily. It deals with lots of things, domestic violence, the relationship between two sisters, but I didn't believe it was predominantly about domestic violence. It was more about, and actually in all of them, just a call to action.
Yeah.
You know, what we do if we are victimized in our lives at any point, what gets us to a place where that victim then starts to take action?
Action.
And it's in terms of the curation, it just, as I'm talking to you now, it seems like they all have that theme.
Yeah.
A call to action, because Kafka definitely does. So did Spike Heels and Orphans definitely.
Yeah.
When is enough enough?
When is enough enough?
And the different tools that you use.
Well, and also, that's right. Yeah. And the antidote for, you know, we've all experienced being bullied at some point in our lives in some way, whether or not it's domestic violence or being bullied in the schoolyard, or, and it doesn't need to be activist-y. It's that thing of, at what point do we say, okay, Or we lose the fear of, okay, I can do something about this. When do we get to that point of ascension that we can actually do something about it?
It's really interesting. You know, you've talked a lot through this interview about facing your fears. And how important that has been for you in your drive to do things in your life. And it just seems like quite a dominant theme.
Yeah, I think it's important. I think that, you know, facing the fear on whatever, for all of us it's different, but then to find a resolution for it so that there can be some inner peace in there.
Yeah.
I think it's really that.
Yeah. There was a great article I was reading actually on storytelling only the other day that was about this idea that as soon as someone begins to share something so personal like that, there's something in our brain, and I'm not going to get too technical here, that switches on. That says, right, I'm listening to you and I'm engaging with you right now.
Wow.
And it's actually, it releases certain chemicals in the brain that help you remember that too. Considering all that, what advice would you give to someone starting out in the industry?
Surround yourself with encouragement.
Mm. Does that come back to your time in New York? And
yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, excuse me, I felt I really grew up there in terms of being encouraged, being championed. Wherever my career would have taken me, whether it was commercial or not, I felt absolutely supported and encouraged. And just through my own experience of that, I know how important that is.
And here's your final question, and it is a two-part question.
Yes.
If your life was a script or a play, first of all, what genre would it be? And what do you think the premise would be?
Definitely a Woody Allen film. The struggling artist, drama, extreme drama, then that makes it comedy.
Good, yeah, coming from a real place to make it comedy.
Absolutely.
The extreme desperation.
The extreme, because I think that's what Woody Allen says, you know, why it's all funny, because it's extreme drama.
That's right.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for having us.
Pleasure. Thank you. Everyone knows the truth. Everyone is speaking to avoid it. The truth resides somewhere between what someone says and the action. Pinter.
Yeah.
Dynamite.
Okay, well, I'm going to start off our wrap-up, because sometimes I need a few minutes to think, but this has been really clear for me. Okay, so I felt this month, you know, we've just spoken to Gabby, and last month we spoke to Cinzia, and both of whom are such warm, amazingly open people. I'm just so honoured by how vulnerable they both made themselves. And
having the strength to do that, though,
but having the strength, and I guess what really got through to me from what Gabby was saying, that strength is in direct relationship to how afraid she is of something.
Yeah. And the spin, the positive spin, I love it, because most people would say the challenge is the thing that stops them. But I don't know, I got the impression from Gabby that that's the thing that actually drives her.
Yeah, the fear is galvanizing, that it's a really positive thing, and particularly where I'm at in my life at the moment. But maybe always, I just love this idea of facing your fears. And I know I heard somewhere last year someone said, if you're afraid of something, that's the direction you should be heading in.
And that's easy to say. It's a lot harder to do. And I think that is the thing. And it's changing that conversation in your head. Oh my God, it is going to be hard. I know that, but I'm willing to face it.
To talk about doing something, but to actually...
Yeah. And to be vulnerable. You know, that's what it's about. Be vulnerable and know that it's not going to be easy, and be willing to say that to yourself, but also to go, come on, get up and you can do this. That's my take out, Lauren Bailey.
Well, that was Podcast 10's awesome interview.
She's an absolute delight to interview, Lauren,
she? It's been really interesting too, just having interviewed Cinzia and now interviewing Gabby, and they're such strong female characters who are doing such amazing stuff in the Australian industry. So very exciting.
Very exciting. And you know what? We're not going to end this podcast without some recommendations from you, Lauren. Have you got some recommendations for this month?
Well, I hope this doesn't seem strange, but I really want to recommend Kafka's Monkey. I know we've just talked about it
in
the interview, but I'm really excited about the work they're doing at Q44. So we mentioned in the interview, I haven't seen any of the shows that Q44 has put up this year so far. You've seen them all. But I've heard so many great things from people around me. Mm. There seems to be a lot of truth in the work they're doing, and I'm really interested in that aspect.
I think they're one of the most exciting theatre companies going around in Melbourne at the moment.
Yeah.
I just love their work. And as I said, the detail is just fantastic to watch, whether you are an actor or you just enjoy the theatre. That kind of detail and work is just beautiful to watch.
Yeah, well, I guess, that's what that's what I mean by the truth. But so, so of course the show opens Thursday night and then they run through to the end of the month. And for anyone who's in Melbourne, I definitely, definitely recommend that you check it out. So we'll put all the relevant info on the site. And just as part of that recommendation, I don't know how much you've been following it, Nick, but there's been a lot of, you know, we've had some great Australian films released this year.
Yes.
And there's been a lot of critique in the media.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess you could say a lot of pulling down of the work that we're putting out there. And I know there's been also quite a bit of an outcry from people in the industry about why are we not more supportive of the films that we're making. And I think that goes across the spectrum, films, theatre. I just want to encourage people, anyone out there, go and see, make it your goal to go and see something Australian.
I agree. And it, actually, I think it's been backed up by poor ticket sales as well. So not only has it been fairly harsh in regards to critics, but also I don't think Aussie films have been getting the support that they need. And they need to get the support for us to be able to continue to make them.
Exactly. And I mean, we're making amazing stuff. So, you know, it follows that it should be seen. So I just want to do a call out to people to go and support the stuff that we're making.
And to support that as well, obviously Gough Whitlam has not long passed away, and Cate Blanchett recently paid tribute because Gough was a huge supporter of the arts. And I think this is an important little quote from Gough that probably sits quite nicely with what you just said there, Lauren.
Yeah.
He said, "In any civilized community, the arts and associated amenities must occupy a central place. Their enjoyment should not be seen as remote from everyday life." And I'm paraphrasing here a little bit, but "our other objectives are all a means to an end. The enjoyment of the arts is an end in itself." And I think the beauty of that is support what we're doing in the arts, because if we can create a strong artistic community here, everything else is supported.
Supported by that. We're gesturing into the air here, which you can't see because it's just audio. But for anyone who missed Cate Blanchett's tribute speech to Gough, we'll put a link for that on the website
too, because
it's beautiful.
And talks so strongly about the importance of arts in the community.
Yeah. So what about you, Nick? Have you got some recommendations for me?
I do, yes. Our Twitter has been going off like a frog in a sock, Lauren. So I wanted to just do some shout-outs for people that are now our wonderful listeners and followers that have touched base to say, hey, if you could support us, that would be great. And one of them was Gordon Haywood.
Oh, yes, the exhibition.
Yes, so Human Menagerie, an exhibition by Gordon Haywood, is happening at 100th Gallery, which is 200 Normanby Road, South Melbourne. It's basically a collection of light-hearted satire on human and animal behaviour and the blurred lines between the difference of the two. And I've been to 100th Gallery, and it's in a really sort of odd little spot there on Normanby Road. But if you can make the effort and head down there, it's going to be beautiful because it is a lovely little space.
It's really interesting. It sounds kind of... It sounds quite similar in idea to the Rod McRae.
That's actually when
work that I saw down in Warrnambool. Yeah, that's really interesting. I can't wait to check it out. And
yeah, exactly. It is happening from the 10th of November, so today, to the 19th of December.
Well, depending on when you're listening.
Yeah, that's right.
Today for us.
Today for us. To the 19th of December. So it runs for just over a month. Get along to 100th Gallery in South Melbourne. The other one I did want to mention is the lovely theatresydney.info website.
Neil,
exactly. Yes. Niall.
Niall?
Niall.
Mr. Tangney.
Yes, indeed. So Mr. Tangney has basically started a beautiful little website, which is a great little resource for Sydneysiders. It basically gives you what's on in Sydney regarding theatre, as well as a list of venues, which is Always handy if you're looking for a place to put on a show. And another great thing it does is if you've got a show, he will very happily promote it on the page for no cost at all. And people go and check out the website. So it's another great way to market your show if you need another avenue. Great. That's it from me in regards to recommendations.
Love the Twitter sphere. I know in New York and LA they have tweet ups where you can actually meet the people that you've connected with on Twitter. I wonder if there's something like that in Melbourne. Maybe you should start. Someone should start that. I'm going to look into that.
Put it out into the ether. Someone will start it for Australia.
So what else is on for you this month, Nick?
So, digital facelift that I talked about last month.
Yes. Oh, and the website looks... Sorry, I don't want to steal your thunder, but the website looks amazing.
Exactly. I've updated my website, www.nickcain.net. That's a bit of shameless promotion. Do me a favour. Go and check it out. Tell me what you like and what you don't like. So that's great. The other side of it was my voice reel that I talked about from last month. That's been a big undertaking. I'm still working through getting that finalized because it's quite amazing the amount of time that that takes to not only source all the audio, but also then find the bits that you want.
Yeah. I'm always amazed at how long it takes to put a reel together of any sort, whether it's a show reel or a voice reel.
The other thing is I shot a beautiful little web comedy series this month as well called My PT, which was originally done as a TV pilot that never got picked up. So this gentleman, whose name is Steve Hayden, as a part of Haybo Productions, has decided to create a web series.
Oh, that's a fantastic way of going, well, no, this is my content. You know, what else am I going to do with it and changing mediums?
That's exactly what he thinks. So it's My PT, which is based around a personal training studio or a gym, whatever you want to call it.
And they used you even though you're so scrawny.
I know, exactly. Wow. And I'm one of the trainers too, so watch out. Here's another thing for you, Lauren.
Yes.
Warning bells. I'm going to be jobless as of the end of this week.
Really? That's exciting.
It is exciting. I'm going to be a full-time artist for a period of time. I will be looking for another job in the creative producing space. Yep. But for now, I need a bit of headspace. So I'm going to be taking a little bit of time off to really, I guess, recalibrate on what I want to do.
And there are other projects in the pipelines.
I'm so secretive, aren't I, Lauren? But there is something larger in the pipelines. And we'll talk about that soon. I promise you I will tell you soon, listeners. And the final thing is I'm going to get shoulder surgery this month.
Oh, it's finally happening.
It's finally happening. So it's been a 4 or 5 year process. I won't get bogged down in the detail, but it's going to be an interesting time where I do stay quite physically fit, Lauren, and to not be able to move in the way that I want to for what will be upwards of 6 weeks is going to be an interesting time and will affect my performance work as well. And,
sure. I mean, it's good to get those sorts of operations out of the way though, because then you can start rehab. It's harder to wait to have the surgery than to be like, okay, now I can figure out how to get better again.
Can't wait to get it done.
Yeah.
And Lauren, what's your month looking like?
Oh, well, I'm probably going to be a little secretive too. But it is really interesting. You know, at last podcast I was so busy, and then this month has been like, okay, well, what's happening now? And I've been going on quite a few auditions, which is exciting.
Great.
I've got one more shoot day of the feature film. Excellent. Then hopefully I'm going to have some time to focus on a couple of other projects that have not had the gift of my attention of late. And I think one of those is a web project and one of those is a short film. But that's probably all I can say on both of those.
I love it. I just enjoy the fact that you just said I might have a bit of time this month. Like you might have actually...
Don't hold me to it.
We've been proved wrong before by saying that.
We always catch ourselves out by saying that. But yes, hopefully, you know, it's summer. Certain things... TV production stuff will slow down, but then obviously there's commercials. So it is a different time of year.
Time to recalibrate.
Yes. Look forward to that.
That is it for the podcast this month. Till we come back to you next month with another great podcast.
When hopefully we're less secretive.
We're less secretive. Secret Squirrels 007 style this time around. But you can still find us on the usual channels. There is the new website that we've launched, which is www.theactorstorytelling.com.au. And when I say new, it's a month or two old now, but please go and check it out and just love it and give us feedback on it.
Yes, we'd love your feedback. And speaking of feedback, we also went live with our new segment, The Storyteller Snapshot, last month with the fantastic and wonderful Dave Harrison, who's artistic director of the King's Collective in Sydney, will be doing these from time to time just so we can touch base with storytellers around the country and see what they're up to. It's a short segment, so it's a bit different to our monthly podcast, and we would love your feedback. Love to know who you'd love to hear from. So please, please let us know.
Use it as a little recharge in between, I don't know, your job or whatever. Just take 10 minutes out of your day, because they're generally about 10 minutes from the one that we've
done so far. We've had one. They will generally be.
But they'll be shorter and a good opportunity to hear from many, many different artists. So you can also check out the About Me. That's still there, the about.me page. Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud and iTunes. Wow. All of those. Get involved.
And remember to join us on the Act of Storytelling.
Thanks for listening.